We have an opener. I swear. We've got an opener. No, no. Like, we gotta roll with it. We gotta roll with it, Luke. Come on, buddy. It's Friday.
It's Friday. All right, folks. Welcome to Dueling Tangents. My name is Luke Mathers. You are listening to Dueling Tangents across Civic Media here in Madison, broadcasting live from the Solidarity Realty Studios on Madison's Near West Side for Mad Radio 92.7 FM, WMDX, 1580 AM, and around the state of Wisconsin on a Civic Media radio station near you. You can find out where
recording
all of those radio
stations
are across the Civic Media network by heading over to the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us. But around the state, the Shaw and Waukesha, Talk of Green Bay and Green Bay, and so many more. And it's Friday, so we will take your tangents on just about anything. We're going to get to the most Wisconsin headline of the week coming up a little bit later. But to start today's show, we are joined by State Representative Francesca Hong, representing the 76th Assembly District in the State Assembly. Francesca, how are we doing on this Friday afternoon?
I'm doing well, Luke. Please call me Fran.
I always feel like I got to get the formal introduction out there first, though.
I generally make just the Republicans call me Representative Hong, so we're amongst friends today, right?
Well, appreciate that, Fran. I'm really glad that you have some time to take out of your Friday afternoon to join me here on the airwaves. The big guy, Brian, wanted to be here, but he insists he will be stopping by the restaurant for either a late lunch or dinner. I don't know the exact timing, but he's planning to swing over there and get some ramen so that he can count that as his visit with you today.
I love that. Sending Brian all the good vibes. The team will absolutely take care of him.
Perfect. Well, we appreciate you joining us. And we've got just a couple of things going on here in the state of Wisconsin these days. You know, it's an off year. I would think with the elections behind us now that we've had our spring elections, we would be waiting for a slow news day. But unfortunately, we don't really receive those here in the state of Wisconsin. It is kind of all the time coming at us. And so we've got a shared revenue proposal that's going on. We've got the budget process. And we're also in the midst right now of Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month. That is the month of May. And you have a proposal that I was a little surprised when I saw this over at Madison 365, but it's a bipartisan proposal, Fran. What can you tell us about the proposal teaching Hmong history here in Wisconsin that is before the legislature?
Absolutely. So before I was in the legislature, Representative Katrina Shanklin and some of her Republican colleagues then introduced a bill that would add Asian Americans and Hmong Americans specifically to Act 31. Now, what Act 31 does is it designates that school boards include instruction on African Americans, Latinos, as well as Indigenous folks. And Asian Americans were excluded in that legislation. So what this bill does is it includes Asian Americans, and it's been introduced now, I think, over three sessions, and each time it has stalled in committee and was never given a public hearing. This year, we reintroduced it with Republicans actually as the lead author. So we have Representative Pat Snyder over in Wausau, and then Senators Corey Tomchick and Jesse James up in Central and Western Wisconsin as well. They are the primary authors. And this year, the Education Committee will be giving it a public hearing, which is an incredibly big step for us. We know that last session, it was fewer than 11% of Democratic-led bills that received, bipartisan bills that received a public hearing. So we're so excited that AB 32 will be given a public hearing in the Committee on Education. None of this would have happened without countless hours of organizing, advocacy, and engagement from students, families, school champions all across the state. But I think it goes to show that organizing works.
Yeah, it's fantastic to hear because I'm a product of the public schools here in the state of Wisconsin, and believe yourself as well.
Yes.
So it's interesting to me, though, to note through my public education that I was unaware of Wisconsin having the third highest population of Hmong Americans in our state. And so the fact that Asian American heritage and history was left out of that original provision, I think it makes perfect sense to add that in and be able to update our public school curriculum across the state of Wisconsin. And it's terrific to hear that we have a public hearing, and that's the first step. And obviously, there's going to be a lot more organizing that needs to go on to continue to move that proposal forward. And it is terrific to hear that there are lead sponsors now that are of the Republican Party getting behind that, because, as you noted, it was in a very, very small fraction of the proposals last session that, even if they were bipartisan in nature, if they were introduced by Democratic lawmakers, they did not see those public hearings. And so we are in the midst, though, of the AAPI Heritage Month. There's terrific ways for people to get more information. I've been keeping an eye on the History Channel. That's where I've been seeing a lot of the updates for Asian American Pacific Heritage Month. I know that there's a lot of newsletters going around encouraging individuals to go and support Asian businesses across the state of Wisconsin. For some listeners out there that may not have the resources or are just unaware of those resources, how can they learn more about how to participate and celebrate AAPI Heritage Month?
Well, you're welcome to visit. Our office have multiple resources via our social media pages, or you can send us an email or a DM, and we're happy to provide additional resources about Asian-owned businesses in your area. But I think what's most important to remember about Asian American stories and Asian American history is that it's distinctly American. It's distinctly Wisconsin. Our values when it comes to respecting the elders, being in community, knowing that, we are, yes, a fast growing population, but also one that is not a monolith. And we have many diverse stories and so much to contribute to every community. So get to know folks in your Asian community. Obviously, getting small history lessons are great as well. But I think what's most important to remember is that we are here, we are leaders in communities, and that we're all across the state.
Yeah. And you yourself, the first Asian American lawmaker elected to the state legislature. And so I saw your statement on this being Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month. You hope to be the first of many that come to the legislature and get to serve the state of Wisconsin. And as we are seeing right now, the process for serving the state is going through the budgeting process. Unfortunately, we had about 545 provisions that were removed from the Joint Finance Committee, but you yourself, a small business owner, I know that there's many organizations trying to continue to put some terrific pieces of legislation into the upcoming biennial budget for small business owners specifically. What can you tell us about the budgeting process here in the state of Wisconsin and how that's been looking for small business owners like yourself?
Yes. So as you mentioned, unfortunately, the will of the people, which was reflected in the governor's budget with his multiple listening sessions and Democrats across the state, ensuring that we were putting the priorities of the Wisconsin people, like legalizing cannabis, increasing food security, making sure that small businesses like myself were able to offer things like childcare and making investments in housing. 545 of those provisions were stripped. And now the Joint Committee on Finance are doing what we call executive sessions. And so they meet and they vote on provisions to be included in the final bill, the budget bill that will be presented to the legislature later this June. Unfortunately, one of the items that would have been incredibly beneficial to small business owners across the state was paid family and medical leave. We know that neighboring states around us, we are now an island where we don't have comprehensive paid leave policies. And as a mom, as someone who values people, taking care of their families, it's so important that folks have resources available to be able to take time off to care for their loved ones. And I think that this is really hurting small businesses' ability to be able to retain and recruit talented staff. And so although we're disappointed to see that paid leave was removed from the budget, one of the big issues we're advocating for is investment in childcare. Childcare is essential infrastructure. The people taking care of our children while parents and caregivers are working, they need raises. They need to be able to go to work in places that are providing a good environment for them so that we can take care of our youngest. And so I think this investment in childcare, you're seeing seeing a coalition of different business bodies, including the Restaurant Association, including Main Street Alliance, that have been advocating for investment in childcare and this critical infrastructure for years. We are hoping that when the executive, when JFC meets to vote on investing the baseline $300 million for childcare accounts to make sure we don't see more childcare businesses providers have to close, because we're already seeing it. We're seeing what happens when we disinvest from our communities. And when there's infrastructure as critical as childcare, that impacts folks regardless of if they have kids or not. I have business owner friends who don't have kids, and they recognize how important a strong childcare infrastructure it is to make sure that we have healthier, more whole workforces and that our families are feeling supported. And so for us, we're putting as much as we can behind investment in childcare. And then for me personally right now, as a member of the Healthy School Meals for All Coalition, we were sad to see universal school meals get stripped from the budget, but we're continuing to advocate for free breakfast for all kids across our state.
Fantastic. Folks, you are listening to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers, joined by State Representative Francesca Hong. And it is very important to point out, Fran, that we know some of these things are, there are policy decisions that can be made that have a concrete impact, specifically when it comes to policy surrounding children, because we cut child poverty in half at the federal level with an expanded childhood tax credit. That tax incentive cut child poverty in half. Investing in childcare and doing things for our children, we can see the real world ramifications of what those policies have on families across the state of Wisconsin and across the United States when they're implemented. And so I think it's very important that we're investing in our children. I think it's very important that we're going to be investing in many different things in this budget. It's a biennial budget. It's a huge piece of legislation. We also know that there's a huge piece of legislation going through the state legislature right now. So we do have to head to a commercial break, but I want to pick your brain on the shared revenue proposals that are being discussed, both the Republican state lawmaker proposals and the one from Governor Tony Evers. Folks, if you want to share a tangent with us here on this Friday afternoon, you can give us a call. Send us a text, 844-967-2789. Joined by State Representative Francesca Hong, representing the 76th Assembly District in the State Assembly. And it's a beautiful Friday afternoon, so if you're on the road, you're listening along to Civic Media, share a tangent with us. We're going to continue the conversation with the representative when we get back.
Into a song while I'm here.
You said it, man.
Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. You are listening to Dueling Tangents across Civic Media. If you want to learn more about what we're up to here as a growing radio network across the state of Wisconsin, follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook, TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, all of the socials, Civic Media. And I am joined on a Friday afternoon by Francesca Hong, state representative representing the 76th Assembly District in the State Assembly. And Francesca, we've got an interesting dilemma, it seems like, at the different state assembly and state senate Republicans finding where they are on shared revenue.
Luke. Republicans are in disarray.
But
they seem to be playing each other right now, and I am okay with that if it just wasn't at the expense of the people of Wisconsin.
Yeah, if the stakes weren't so high, I think it would be a little bit more interesting to keep an eye on. But because the stakes are so high for our local municipalities, it's very important that a piece of legislation gets sent through the state legislature and signed by Governor Tony Evers. He indicated when the Republican proposal initially came out that he was not going to be able to sign it as is. He threatened a veto, and it got Republican lawmakers having a conversation about where they could make some changes and seek some compromise. at least some of our Republican lawmakers in Wisconsin. Robin Voss is pretty much this week came out to the steps of the state capitol and said, I'm done negotiating. He made very, very little concessions. He essentially raised the minimum threshold from 10% to 15% for funding to municipalities, but still kept in all of the strings attached for the city and county of Milwaukee to be able to accept the increases of shared revenue. And really, as I believe it was State Senator Lena Taylor saying, that it is essentially a gun to the county and city's head when it comes to finances. It's saying you need to accept this, otherwise you're going to go off a fiscal cliff. And so we'd love to just hear your thoughts that how it's been unfolding in the state capitol, in the building, about these discussions surrounding shared revenue and where you believe there may be some compromise between the Republican proposal and the proposal put forth by Democratic Governor Tony Evers.
So I think first it's really important to recognize that for the past 12 years, we have been asking our towns, our cities, our villages to do more with less. Shared revenue, the money that is coming in from taxpayers across the state, should be shared with local municipalities so they can provide vital services like fire and EMS, and making sure that local roads and stop signs and city services all function properly. But unfortunately, that formula has been broken because the state has not been distributing their fair share. It is due time that local municipalities are properly funded so that they can provide the services that Wisconsinites rely on. The governor's budget proposal for shared revenue put in a good chunk of that almost $7 billion surplus we have right now so that our local municipalities and our counties are able to provide vital services for our communities. Unfortunately, the Republicans, are saying they may be arguing in good faith and have been bringing folks to the table. But unfortunately, these negotiations have created a bill that is not ready for prime time, that is inadequate, and that is unfinished. And for the speaker to say that now he is done negotiating is basically saying them he's going to punt. He's evading responsibility. And it's incredibly unfortunate because these dollars that need to go to our municipalities, especially the city of Milwaukee, it is a very critical juncture. And so it's, again, to play politics instead of putting Wisconsinites first is something that we see our Republican colleagues doing all the time. I'm somewhat hopeful that the Senate, Senator Devin LeMahieu is indicated that he may take some of the policies out. But what is needed most is what the governor proposed, a clean bill that doesn't put policies into the shared revenue formula. When Republicans back in the Walker days, they would talk about local control all the time. But unfortunately, the bill in front of us undermines local control. It takes away local municipalities from doing things like putting in referendum and deciding how to use the dollars that their constituents have been paying. We want there to be autonomy for our cities, villages, and towns. They know what's best for their communities. And so ultimately, what's needed is a clean bill. What I think the compromise will be is hopefully there will be local municipalities will still have authority to do more with the dollars. We're eagerly anticipating what happens in the Senate, but I am hopeful that we are going to get much needed relief out to our local municipalities.
Yeah, and it's going to be very important to keep an eye on how the state Senate, through its public hearing in the coming days and weeks, formulates their proposal, what passes that legislative body, and how the two sides between the state assembly and state Senate will have to come together around that. And a lot of the things that happen inside the building do receive some public pressure from outside organizing, as you and I have discussed both today and many a times in your appearances in the past. What can you tell us about what's going on around the state capitol tomorrow?
Yes. And so we know that investment in our kids, they are needed now so that we have a more sustainable future for Wisconsin. When I hear my Republican colleagues not want to make investments in our children and their well-being, I wonder who do they expect to take care of them when they get older and aren't working anymore. But what's most important for our communities, rural, urban, suburban, is investment in our schools. And so there is going to be a rally tomorrow morning at the state capitol. I'm sorry, tomorrow afternoon. Noon at the state capitol, Saturday, May 20th at 2 p.m. You can join other public school champions, parents, educators, community members who know how important it is to have strong public schools for our democracy, for our kids, and our communities.
Fantastic. So you can enjoy the farmers market up on the square and then go and do a little political action, maybe grab some lunch with a terrific bowl of ramen like Brian's going to try to do today for either his late lunch or early dinner. Francesca Hong, thank you so much for joining us here on Dueling Tangents. We really appreciate you taking some time out of your Friday afternoon and joining us.
Absolutely. Happy to be here. Take care.
Thanks, you too. Folks, if you want to share a tangent with us, 844-967-2789. We're going to be right back.
About to find out. Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger. Featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Saturday and Sunday at 1 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Golden faces dancing in the sand.
Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers. You're listening to Dueling Tangents across Civic Media. You can download the Civic Media app and take us with you on the go wherever you go this summer. It's getting ready for the holidays. We got the Memorial Day holiday coming up. Then you got the next excellent summer holidays, that is. You got Flag Day, Independence Day, all the way through Labor Day. When you're traveling throughout the summer, take us with you on the go. Download the Civic Media app. Wherever apps are downloaded, you can jump from station to station, stream to stream, and hear all the excellent programming being produced here by Civic Media. And I want to thank again State Representative Francesca Hong for joining us for that first half hour of the show. If you missed any portion of the show, you can check out the podcast. It will be posted later this afternoon. And really appreciate Francesca taking the time out of her afternoon to join us to discuss all of those topics. And interestingly, she brought up something that I want to dive into before we get head over to the most Wisconsin headline of the week. And if you've got a Wisconsin headline that you want to submit for the most Wisconsin headline of the week, give us a call. Send us a text, 844-967-2789. Evan, I have a feeling you're not going to be surprised by what I got pulled for the most Wisconsin headline.
I don't like surprises, Luke.
I don't think you're going to be surprised. Don't worry. But before we get to that, something Francesca and I were alluded to in our conversations, and this one came up to me, is investing in young people, and Republicans so adamantly against childcare, being able to fund universal school lunch and breakfast, and all of the various things, the attacks on education, telling schools and libraries what books they can and cannot read. It's baffling to me why Republicans are so shocked that they come up with theories like indoctrination. It's the schools are indoctrinating these young people. It's not that our ideas are terrible. It's the indoctrination at our schools. And the headline came across in preparing for today's show. And it's an interesting headline because it doesn't really allude to the body of the piece, but kind of does. The return of the emerging Democratic majority? Question mark. This is over at New York Magazine, written up by Eric Levitz.
Emerging Democratic majority?
Yeah, you got that upwards inflection. Good job. Good job, Yee. But essentially, it talks about how Zoomers, the Generation Z, Zoomers, and Millennials are now to the point where we are the largest voting bloc for demographics here in Wisconsin. Excuse me, the country. And so the rise was first seen in 2018 when in a midterm election year, which typically tends to have lower voter turnout, it was surprising how many young people came out to vote in 2018, and goes into something that we talked about a lot here on Dueling Tangents all last fall, is the lack of the red wave that was supposed to be in this most recent midterm election, 2022. And so, talking about the demographic changes to be able to explain why the electoral results of 2022 were against the standard trend. Typically, in the midterm election, the presidential, the party that is in the White House, the political party of the president, tends to fare poorly compared to the out of the White House party.
To my mind, I mean, it was a frenetic 4 years. It was intense. I mean, that he wore people out. 45 wore people out. I mean, the constancy, if that's a word, just how intense it was.
Yeah.
Never ending.
And 2022 was going to be a jump away from that, Evan. He was not on the ballot. He was not on the ballot in 2022. He did endorse a lot of candidates. So through extension, he was on some ballots, you could say. Tim Michaels, the Republican nominee for governor here in Wisconsin, was very excited to have that endorsement throughout the primary. And then the day after the primary, tried to get rid of it. But there's been a lot of conversation. There's going to be a lot of analysis still going forward about the 2022 numbers. How we got to where we are. Why the effects were not what it was not. Past was not prologue in 2022. There were trends that were tossed. Those trends did not see. And yes, Republicans still won back the House of Representatives, but they did not fare well in statewide elections or elections for the U.S. Senate. And so this piece over at the New York Magazine discusses why those trends may be the case and why Gen Z and millennials may be voting the way that they are. So the opening of the piece goes through a lot of analysis, specifically from the Democratic data firm Catalyst. It points to another critical factor of why those trends were bucked. And it's the political ascendance of millennials and Zoomers. America's youngest adult generation has been integral to the 2018 blue wave. Millennials saw their turnout rate surge from 22% in 2014, in that midterm year, to 42% 4 years later in 2018. The oldest Zoomers became eligible to vote in that midterm for the first time, and they cast ballots at a rate higher than millennials or Gen Xers had in their respective first midterms. Critically, Zoomers and millennials collectively cast more than 60% of their votes for Democrats, helping the party win the national House vote by a landslide margin.
And I was shocked, right?
That was back in 2018.
Yeah. A lot of people were really, really impressed, you could say, at the turnout.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I try and sort of temper the excitement, that frenetic, antisocial energy that the GOP has been bringing. I mean, there's a counterweight to it. People are going to get uncomfortable with it. People are going to want to do something about it. You know, the timing was almost sort of perfectly metered to get people to the polls.
Right. And so discussed that this was an ominous development, and this reading from the piece, it was an ominous development for the GOP. Still, Republican operatives could comfort themselves with a pair of thoughts, two thoughts. First, while America's rising generations might turn out in historical high numbers to rebuke President Trump, their participation was bound to fall sharply once politics grew more banal. And second, though millennials and Zoomers were currently the least Republican generations that America had produced since Lincoln's time, they would surely age into a more ordinary partisan distribution. But in 2022, we saw that was not kind thinking, or it was not kind to the wishful thinking of those two thoughts. And so we've seen now, and now there's a question of whether or not those anomalies of 2018 and 2022 of higher voter turnout among younger generations is now going to be the trend rather than an exception to the rules.
Not even an exception, right? A response to that intensity, once again. As things cool down a little bit, I would expect the numbers to cool down as well. That's my take on it.
Well, and interestingly enough, Evan, that's the take of this piece too. It is not surprising that millennials have retained their exceptionally strong Democratic lean even as they've exited their youth. although cohorts do tend to grow a bit more conservative when or if they have children and buy a home, most voters' political affiliations are cemented in adolescence and early adulthood, when a myriad of other aspects of their identities are forged. Millennials spent their formative years watching George W. Bush preside over catastrophic wars and an economic disaster, while his party embraced soon-to-be-discredited social crusades, such as opposition to gay marriage. And millennials were also raised by parents who were markedly more social liberal than the boomers' forebears. It is therefore unsurprising that the generation has proven durably hostile to a Republican Party that refuses to abandon the culture commitments of America's white evangelical minority. And so I think that in really well summation sums up how we got the midterm election results that we had in 2018 and 2022. And we can continue to see these cultural fights just being picked up by the Republican Party here in Wisconsin and around the country. Bud Light, Mr. Potato Head, Dr. Seuss, these cultural wars that they want to wage, that they want M&Ms.
It wears people out.
M&Ms.
You can, you know, it's fun for a little while. It's fun for a little while.
And it's not even fun for a little while, Evan. Yeah. Most of the time I'm just scratching my head and I'm saying, where is this coming from?
It's fun for them, you know? It's a morsel to chew on for a little bit. But your dog gets tired, right? Yeah. You can't chew all the time. 24/7 for years.
So this piece is an excellent, again, long-form journalism over at the New York Magazine. I highly recommend it. It is a fascinating piece talking about the specific trends, because this will be a topic that we'll continue to talk about here on Dueling Tangents, is whether or not 2018 and 2022 were outliers or the beginning of a new trend. Because a lot of folks... Evan, we were called crazy here on Dueling Tangents during the 2022 midterms. I'm talking about how I did not think it was going to be a red wave. I talked about it. I was receiving the data. Simon Rosenberg, a political scientist that I was following very closely, was talking about a lot of these trends and a lot of this information back in October and November leading up to those midterms. And you had people calling in, no, it's going to be a red wave, red tsunami.
Yeah, I saw people cooling off too. You know, I didn't get the same data you did, but just... because things got pretty spooky for a little while there around 2018. You could see it. You could really see it around, right?
Yeah.
Where I lived, you could see it. You know, more flags. You know, people doing these little, not parades, but just driving around the block, driving around town for a few hours, you know, with a bunch of flags up, music blasting. It was this sort of really weird energy.
Well, and, it's interesting because the Let's Go Brandon signs that I've seen in my... in my community, they're gone.
Yes, they are.
They've been fading away. They've been leaving. And so it's going to be interesting to see when, it seems like he's going to be back on the ballot this time. All signs are pointing to a 2024 rematch between former President Donald Trump and Joe Biden.
And DeSantis. That's weird, man. That's weird.
Do you think...
I don't know. I just don't. He has a lot of money. He's got that going for him, which is nice.
I think he...
He has no charisma. Goodness gracious.
He has negative charisma.
Yes, he does.
I would say he has negative... It's not that he has no charisma. He has negative charisma.
Yeah.
But I think he's been delaying an announcement for president because I think he's second-guessing it.
He's been trashing Trump. That's the thing that sort of...
You could still do that as governor of a state, though. You don't have to be a presidential candidate.
It just
to do
seems
that.
Rather aggressive, you know, if you're not going to be...
I don't think he's been nearly aggressive enough. I don't know. If he truly wanted to jump into that race, I think you have to come out swinging. You have to take the talking points that Chris Christie, former governor of New Jersey, is using, saying that you got to punch Trump right in the mouth.
Well, he threw a Charlie horse. That's how I see it.
Threw
a Charlie horse.
I don't even know if there's anything been that strong. I think the pudding fingers remarks that DeSantis has been labeled with is the hardest punch I've seen in any hypothetical Republican primary so far. But it is interesting to see if Ron DeSantis does announce. But even...
because I wouldn't know who else it would be. That's really the only thing.
If you're given the choice, though, between Coke and Diet Coke, Evan, one are you picking? Which one are you picking? Are you picking Coke or Diet Coke? If you're a fan of Coca-Cola, are you going to pick Coke or Diet Coke?
Coke.
Right.
Coca-Cola.
And so if you're a Republican voter that's a fan of Donald Trump, you're not going to take Donald Trump light in Ron DeSantis or any of the other GOP governors that would try to imitate and impersonate Donald Trump and be like, I'm Donald Trump without the baggage. If you can vote for Donald Trump, if you're a Trump fan and you have that option in the GOP primary, which all signs are pointing that he is going to be the front runner in that primary, Republican primary voters are going to vote for Donald Trump.
Sure.
It does not seem like any of the other alternatives are making the case. And then you've got Trump back on the ballot again. So then it's not a midterm like 2018 or 2022 when his name's not on the ballot. It is an instance of 2020.
Gotta say, though, the last month has been pretty nice. He's been taking some hits.
It'll be interesting to see. We'll continue to keep an eye on that primary as well. We're going to get to the most Wisconsin headline of the week coming up next, as well as your phone calls. You can call or text 844-967-2789. It is a Friday afternoon here on Dueling Tangents. You can also follow the show on Twitter at Dueling Tangents there. Keep up with the show after we end at 3 o'clock.
What's Elon doing, do you think?
I think he's just running a social media company into the ground. Folks, share your tangents with us on this Friday afternoon, 844-967-2789.
B2.7 WMDX.
It's Friday, 'cause I've been working all week. I've got a feeling inside me, a feeling like
welcome back to Dueling Tangents. You can share a tangent with us in our final segment of the week, 844-967-2789. Again, the number to call or text, 844-967-2789. And it's time for the most Wisconsin headline of the week. Evan, I'm a little upset about this one, but boy, I think we are probably the only state where this can make such a major headline. Maybe there's one, two other states that would have it, but you got any guesses of what I saw this week as the most Wisconsin headline?
I do not, man. I don't. I know some cliches. I know some Midwestern stereotypes, but no. Give it to me.
After 87 years, the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile is getting a new name.
Ooh, yeah.
Do you see this one?
No, I don't like this.
You didn't see that Oscar Mayer's going to rename the Wienermobile?
I don't like this at all.
It's going to be called the Frankmobile.
Oh, the other name's like misogynist or something. Like they're...
No.
You're going woke on us, Luke.
It's not even going woke. It's an ad campaign. Very similar to how Planters decided to kill Mr. Peanut. They're just... they're trying to come up with a little bit of marketing and... American meat and cold cut producer Oscar Mayer has changed the name of its famous Wienermobile to the Frankmobile. The company, whose history in Madison spans 100 years, says the change is reflective of the hot dog recipe it will be releasing this summer. Since 1936, the hot dog themed Wienermobile, whose drivers are known as hot doggers, has been used to promote Oscar Mayer products. The Frankmobile mostly resembles the Wienermobile, except for a decal displaying the new name. So it's going to have 100% Frankfurters, essentially, now. It's going to be the Frankmobile. And I feel like if they wanted to change it, they could have made it Frank the Tank.
Yeah, I like it. Even though, isn't that... I think that references, like, a pretty terrible, like, crime spree that happened on the West Coast. Yeah,
really?
A guy built a tank in his garage. This is a tangent for us. I wish I had the story in front of me.
You're the true crime professional here on Dueling Tangents.
Yeah. A disgruntled man sort of huddled out in his home and over the course of like months and months and months built a tank. You know, he built a transmission and the frame for it and all the armor
plating. He put
plating.
Together a tank.
Yes. And then he went on, I don't believe anybody got hurt or died.
With a tank involved? That's surprising.
Well,
then.
He just
a homemade
town.
Tank.
Yeah, running streetlights over, you know, and damaging cop cars. Like it was a pretty intense.
It's a pretty intense. You want to know what I think of when I hear Frank the Tank?
I know what I. Well,
I think of the old school, with Will Ferrell. Yes. Will Ferrell going streaking Frank the Tank as
here somewhere.
Yes, in the movie Old School. And that's the only thing that I can think of. But I feel like changing it from Wienermobile to Frankmobile just to promote a change in the recipe for the hot dogs that Oscar Mayer is producing, I guess if you're looking for a marketing ploy, you can go with it. But
nobody
at the
wins
same
here,
time,
man. Nobody wins here.
At the same time, this is a pretty Wisconsin headline to see that the beloved Wienermobile is changing its name for marketing reasons. And this submission brought to us by William Walter. I wanted to talk about it on Wednesday, and Will said, no, you need to save that one for the most Wisconsin headline of the week. So that was Will's submission, and it is my winner for this week, because by far, very interesting to see that this is what's making headlines, is the marketing ploy for Oscar Mayer. Folks, if you want to share a tangent with us here in the final minutes of the show for the week, 844-967-2789. You can call or text. You got something there? Oh, okay. All right. You're signaling to me that you got something.
I'll be back in a moment.
Oh,
I won't leave. I'm here with you.
I thought it was, I got one more thing I wanted to add to the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile.
I wish.
Yeah, it is a pretty interesting marketing ploy. But also going on with some of the notable Wisconsin headlines is over at the Journal Sentinel, talking about how Milwaukee is the specific one of the only places in the world where you can have a city that is celebrating all of the different festivals that it will be celebrating this year. So festival season kicking off on the Summerfest grounds, the Henry Mayer Festival grounds on Milwaukee's lakefront. And that was a close runner-up. Can you hear me?
Yeah, buddy, I got you.
Oh, okay. I couldn't hear myself. And then, all right. But talking about all the festivals going around the area for the city of Milwaukee, including Summerfest, but all of the Irish Fest, German Fest, Festa Italiana, and so many more. So that is another very Wisconsin headline of the week. But it is very fascinating to see the Wienermobile changing its name to the Frankmobile.
This is not a good thing. No one wins here. Like you said, it's almost a century of lore, of established presence.
Did you ever get to tour one?
Maybe in school once. If I did, it was, I can say this now, over 20 years ago.
Wow, there you go.
Yeah.
I had friends that used to like follow it around when it was in town to try to see, wait to get it to stop, because they always gave the whistles away.
Oh, yeah. No, so yeah, they were pumped, ready to go.
So there was always, throughout the summers in high school, the friends would be driving around for Wienermobile sightings and try. I believe one of my friends got to sit in the front seat. I would have to ask him real quick to find out if that truly was the case. But that was for a while there. I feel like that's a Wisconsin tradition, is going and getting your picture taken with the Wienermobile, but now it's going to be the Frankmobile.
And there are six of them. You know, there are six Wienermobiles.
What?
So they can be everywhere at once. That's right. There are
six. Did we have one specifically located here in Wisconsin? Because I know that the Oscar Mayer is now left from the Madison plant. But next closest plant, I want to say, is Davenport or Des Moines.
I can only imagine that, yeah, they do strategically space them out, right? But there is an app. There is an app that you can download.
There's an app that you can track the Frankmobile now?
The Frankmobile, that's right.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to have to see. Well, that's a cool app. The Civic Media app, much, much cooler. But that I may have to see if I can get that onto my smartphone and see what we're going about tracking the Frankmobile throughout the summer. It's definitely something I know tons of young kids, even in the high schoolers, chasing it around. So it's an icon here in Wisconsin. Very interesting to see. I wonder if it's going to get renamed. Say they change the recipe again, Evan, if it's going to get renamed to be the Wienermobile one day, or if it's going to forever be the Frankmobile.
They might as well. If they change it now, then, you know, anything can happen. You know, my world has been shaken.
It's the most Wisconsin headline of the week. Folks, you've been listening to Dueling Tangents. Really appreciate, again, State Representative Francesca Hong for joining us, giving us a breakdown of her proposal and a bipartisan proposal to go before the state legislature to include Asian American and Hmong heritage in history lessons for public schools, giving us a breakdown of the budget negotiations and the shared revenue proposals. If you missed any portion of the show, go check out the podcast. Have an excellent weekend. Dueling Tangents will be back at 2 p.m. on Monday. We'll talk to y'all then.
Hey, honey. Hey.
What the hell are you doing?
We're streaking.
The male reproductive organ, also known as tallywhacker, schlong.